from that context, he is referred as the father of all the Buddhas. And then also among the within the state of omniscient mind of the Buddha, Manjushri appeared in the form of enlightened being, as in the aspect of a wisdom being. So wisdom comes in the category of what is known as the mother. Therefore, Manjushri is also referred as the mother of all Buddhas. Therefore, we use the word mother to Parijana Paramita Sutra. As Maitreya says in his ornamental realization that I pay homage to Parijana Paramita Sutra, the mother of all the wisdoms. It is the wisdom realizing emptiness which produces all the four childs of the Buddha. It's also from that point of view, the wisdom realizing emptiness is referred as the mother. And then Manjushri also appeared among other bodhisattvas as a immediate follower of the Buddha, and therefore he is also referred as the child of all the Buddhas. So therefore Manjushri, from those perspectives, is seen as the father of all the Buddhas, the mother of all the Buddhas, and the child of all the Buddhas. And of course, Manjushri definitely would see all sentient beings with a great feeling of closeness and pleasure. But unless the practitioner and the student has the necessary devotion, the qualification and realization, we cannot simply receive the gift of compassion of Manjushri. So therefore in this line it says that merely through the glance of Manjushri it has the power to offer the supreme gift of intelligence by which one is able to realize the profound thought of the Buddha, and through which one is able to develop one's intelligence month by month and day by day. So having heard this, Tsongkhapa says that for a long time, continuously, I have relied upon you as my supreme deity. And this is what I've been done in the past. And it is through your blessing and compassion, I was able to develop positive qualities like the ever-increasing state of oceans and seas during monsoon. So similarly in the future I have no other refuge. So therefore my only refuge is the treasure of your omniscience, and kindly make my expectation fruitful. So this is true, because when we talk about making spiritual development, it has to be done by removing different types of objects of elimination. And what directly eliminates the negative emotions are the view of emptiness. And what helps removing those afflictive emotions with wisdom is the development of the spiritual qualities on the method side. So it is because of this special need and necessity of wisdom in directly combating the afflictive emotions, Tsongkhapa is saying that I have no other object of refuge, and therefore your lotus feet, I have no other object of refuge, and therefore I take refuge in your treasure of omniscience and knowledge, and therefore make my expectation and hope fruitful. the root and lineage lamas, Vajradhara, similarly Vajrapani. And Manjushri. So you will see here how one takes refuge to these great beings. One takes refuge to Lama, the personal deities, and so forth. One takes refuge to them. Similarly, in the way a person who has committed a crime and seeks the help and support of someone who is more powerful in an ordinary sense. So there is complete trust. So this is one way of taking refuge, which is common to both the Mahayana and the Hinayana. In the Mahayana case, we take refuge to the objects of refuge, motivated by compassion, with a wish to benefit all sentient beings. One is saying that I also would like to acquire qualities similar like you have obtained, so that I am able to help other sentient beings. So it is in this way that one takes refuge. So here you can see that the primary motivation is compassion and concern for other beings. And in order to help these sentient beings, you are saying that kindly help me, guide me, let me acquire qualities similar like you have, so that I will be able to help other sentient beings. And then when you enter into tantric practice, then you visualize that you actualize the state of Vajradhara and so forth right now through visualization. And it is in this way that you take refuge. Next lines read, many of those who desire to practice, as is explained by scholars on the Tantra, and similarly those who are well versed in countless texts, and similarly I am asked several times by the translator. And so Tsongkhapa is saying why he composed this text. He's saying that these different types of people had asked me to compose such a text. So in Tibet, Tantra flourished widely, but however, there were not many who had a complete, unmistaken understanding of the complete tantric teaching. And it is because of this, in certain tantric instructions, there are cautions about whether certain instructions are reliable or not. Therefore, with respect to the Vajra vehicle, it contains the ripening factor of initiation, the actual tantric path, then the pledges and commitments. So with regard to this, there are people who really wanted to sincerely practice those complete teachings, as is explained by reliable scholars who are well versed on the tantric teaching. So these people had, there are many who have that desire. So that's one reason why Tsongkhapa is composing this text. And then second is that he has been asked to compose such a text many times by the translator, who is well versed in many texts. So the translator here refers to Losawa Palsang. So Tsongkhapa, for the translator, we use the word one who is well versed in two languages. But nowadays there are many people who know only not two languages, but who know many languages. But again here, the difference is that those people who knew only two languages, they have undertaken the translation of such wonderful texts, like the text that we have access to that are translated from Sanskrit and so forth. So those translators in the past have contributed immensely solely for the sake of preserving the Buddha's teaching. They undertook great hardship to study the Sanskrit, and so they either translated good text or to proofread a text. But these days there are people who are well versed in many languages, but their main focus may be how to get a good salary, high income, how to become famous and so forth. And then in the end he said, I'm joking, don't be offended. And then the other person who has requested him is one from Depong Chenga Sangpo, who Tsongkhapa also praises by saying that he is someone who, the translator was Chapchok Pelsang, and then the other one who has taken great hardship to make the tantric teaching available in all directions was Depong Chenga Sonam Sangpo. So he also has requested me to compose this text several times, and therefore I'm composing this text. And so this refers to some of the causes by which he has decided to compose this text. When Tsongkhapa composed this text, he did so not because he wanted to become famous or recognized as a good scholar. He composed this text solely to benefit other sentient beings and to contribute towards the flourishment of Buddha Dharma. So such should be our own motivation. In my own case, as a teacher, I'm trying my best not to develop such a motivation. And even in my case, as I normally say, when I sit on the high throne and as a Dalai Lama, when I explain this text, it is possible that one corner of my mind, I might think that if I explain this nicely, people might recognize my scholarship. So such kind of negative attitudes can easily creep in. So it's really important to always remain watchful, and so as a teacher, one's mind should be without such mental defilements, otherwise your whole effort is wasted. And then as a listener, your motivation should also be similarly pure. Then another cause for composing this text is that there are those who are unable to see these teachings as instructions for practice, and they are easily satisfied by a partial understanding. And then there are others who do not have the mental capacity to analyze the meaning of the text through using stainless reason and logic. And then there are others, even though they had a lot of help, but who so that means, as is said in the Tsongkhapa Salamrim Chemo, that whether it's a sutric teaching or a tantric teaching, people have this tendency to think that these major philosophical texts are meant only for explanation and only meant for talking about and not for practice. For example, in Tantra, let us think about the Guha Samaja, which is seen as the king of all the Tantras. Now people tend to think that tantric teaching as something that should be recited by the monks in the Tantric College, and particularly the abbot of the Tantric College. And people do not think that this shows the path to enlightenment. And then on the other hand, when you have a short text which speaks about a particular deity which showers upon you quick attainment and accomplishment, then you tend to read such text. So this is really the meaning of getting satisfied by a partial understanding. As I've always been saying, that for example, Vajra Yogini as a personal deity, I myself is practicing that. It's really good, inconceivable. Having all the blessings similar like that of Chakra Samara. So, of course, I'm practicing that. But sometimes, in the case of, it's important to realize that with regard to Vajra Yogini practice, in the Tsongkhapa's composition, there are only, I think, two or three pages, and not more than that. Whereas with regard to Guha Samaja practice, there are around five huge volumes that Tsongkhapa has written. But normally we pay very less attention about Guha Samaja and pay too much attention on other things. So this would really make us enlisted in the category of those people who are easily satisfied by a partial understanding. So if you really want to follow Tsongkhapa's teaching and understand his thought, then you should treat Guha Samaja as the main teaching, and Yamantaka as the preliminary practice, and Chakra Samara as a kind of enhancing practice. So these three practices are the main practices. Then of course we have other practices in relation to Chakra Samara. We have Vajra Yogini and so forth. So that's the whole process. And if you are unable to do it, it's your personal weakness, but that is the general process of practice. And then secondly, Tsongkhapa says there are those who do not really have the mental capacity to use stainless logic and reason. This refers to those people who have some faith and devotion to all teachings, but they do not really have the mental intelligence and the capacity to judge by themselves. For example, that it's because of this, whenever you come across a small text which people say this is full of blessing, then you immediately believe and trust it. Whereas on the other hand, if there is a very important philosophical text, you may not be able to understand it because you are unable to use your intelligence. So what is really important is that whenever you study a text, you should be able to judge it by yourself. You should reflect, you should think. Unless you are able to do that, then you are not. You will not be able to follow the Nalanda tradition. Then you will become a fool, which will be led by any person or teacher who is good at the art of speech or speaking. So on the one hand, you should not be easily satisfied by a partial understanding without relating your understanding to practice. And secondly, you should have intelligence. And thirdly, there are many who had really undertook many years of study about different texts, but they never relate it to transforming their own mind. And now because of this, the more they learn, the more they become arrogant and proud. And because they have some understanding, knowledge about different texts, so because of their understanding and being able to explain the text, they gather more disciples and followers. And because of this, they become more proud and arrogant, and thereby they also develop competitiveness to those who are equal to them, and they get jealous towards those other teachers who are superior to them, and they tend to ignore and look down upon others who are inferior to you. So if your practice becomes like that, then this is really like the medicine becoming the poison and the god becoming devil. So these people will not be able to please the Buddha. Now seeing this, there are those who are thoroughly practicing in accordance with the teaching of the Buddha, as we spoke earlier, the Nalanda, like the Nalanda scholars. In terms of their scholarship, learnedness, they have very profound understanding and they are among the top scholars, but their scholarship is not just dry learning, dry words, but they have great internal realization. Even though they have great internal realization that they can fly in the deep space, but they would not demonstrate it. They would stick to pure Vinaya discipline. for example, the story of the senior monk called Chujung Dharmapala. When his tantric realization increased, then naturally Dakinis would come and flock around him. And at one point, one of the discipline in charge in the Nalanda University was going around the monastery complex, the complex of the university, and when he went by the room of Nitin Chuchung, he heard some voice, female voice, and he saw the gathering of Dakinis. And even though he realized that this Dharmapala has highly realized, but there's no question of realization here. This is a monastic university where there are certain disciplines to be observed. So he was sent out from the monastery. And in fact, there is a story of one protector who even said that if he is banished from the university, I will also follow him. But even after that, there is no story of asking Dharmapala to continue to stay in the monastery. He was banished from the monastic university. So all this clearly shows that even though there is great scholarship and realization, but in terms of their day-to-day life, they followed very sincerely the monastic discipline, because the whole Buddha's teaching and realization has to be constructed on the foundation of discipline. So that is the way of the practice prevalent in Nalanda University. And then that is the same tradition that is followed in Tibet. For example, think about the gathering of Abbot Chandrakshita, Guru Pema Sambhava, and Chujja Tsung Desen. At that time, they made an experiment whether the Tibetans can lead a good monastic discipline. And so they chose seven people. And these seven people were really even given the name that people under experiment. And so when they were ordained, they did very well. And so that was really wonderful. If they did something disgraceful, then the monastic discipline may not have flourished in Tibet. It is because of the hard work of these seven monks. Until now, the teaching of Vinaya flourished. Of course, there are people who lead very often lead a disgraceful life, but in general, the monastic Vinaya discipline flourished in Tibet and preserved in Tibet. So therefore, even in Tibet, it is through the possession of the three qualities, quality of scholarship, good discipline, and good heart or good realization, it is through this way that the Buddha's teaching was preserved. So such monastic discipline flourished in all the four Tibetan Buddhist schools. Even though there had been a lot of upheavals, but the monastic discipline continued to remain. So the teaching of Buddha was therefore preserved through scholarship, discipline, and realization. Scholarship not destroying the discipline, and discipline not destroying the scholarship. Through the harmonious existence of these three qualities, these great past masters followed sincerely the teaching of the Buddha, And then Tsongkhapa says that highly attracted by their wonderful way of life, I'm following their path, and in order to make clear what they practiced, I'm going to compose this text. And therefore, just like a mother to the child, I seek the blessing of the host of Dakinis, born from the field, born instantaneously and born from the mantra. Kindly shower upon me your compassion and grant upon me all the accomplishments, and be kind to me so that I be free from all kinds of obstructions. So Tsongkhapa therefore explains the purposes and the causes of composing such a text in this way. So the final verse has been roughly translated. Tsongkhapa seeks the blessings of the host of Dakinis to show compassion and shower upon him the accomplishments. So he is seeking the support of the host of deities that are born from the field. Those born from the field, the Dakinis that are born from the field, refers to after having received initiation and who have developed the realization of generation stage are called field born. And then from the Goha Samaja point of view, out of the practice of the three isolations, when one has developed the realization of the three isolations, then it is called field born. And then when you develop the realization of the innate quality, then it's called the one from the one from instantaneously born. So he seeks their blessing and compassion to get rid of all the obstructions. So born from the field refers to those who have the realization of the three isolations. Those born instantaneously refers to those who have the realization of the meaning clear light. And then the start of the first chapter, where Tsongkhapa says, those whose Mahayana lineage is not so inferior and who are influenced by the protection of a spiritual master and who has trained in the common path and who is highly moved by great compassion and who is in great haste to liberate the kind mother sentient beings who are wandering within the samsara, then they should enter into the profound Vajra vehicle, which is the short path that quickly grants the state of Buddhahood. So this means that those who have great appreciation of the bodhicitta, then they should take those who have strong feeling of compassion. So one who has some Mahayana lineage, here refers to those who have some feeling of compassion. So this is the inner quality. And then as an external quality, if one is someone who is influenced by a sublime spiritual teacher, sublime spiritual teacher here refers to not only a person who is able to show the Mahayana path, but here we are talking about a spiritual master who is a Mahayana teacher, of course, possessing the 10 qualities or qualifications of a spiritual master. And likewise, as is said by Tsongkhapa in the commentary of the 50 verses of Guru Devotion, where he speaks about the qualification of a spiritual master is to have strong devotion to Mahayana teaching, to have compassion, and then thirdly, well versed in Mahayana teachings, and fourth is very good in guiding the students. Because even if one is a great scholar, one should be very skilled in guiding the students through various stages of the path. And then fifthly, one who is physically, mentally and verbally disciplined, one should take such a person having these qualities as one's lama. So if one is influenced by the guidance and protection of such a spiritual master, then having trained in the common path, the common path here refers to the development of renunciation influenced by the view of emptiness, and that primarily from the perspective of an intelligent student. The view of emptiness here refers to the understanding of lack of disparity between appearance and reality, and based on such understanding one is able to understand the Mahayana viewpoint of the two truths. And based on that understanding, one also develops a thorough understanding of the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. And based on that understanding, one develops a precise understanding of the meaning of the true cessation. So once one understands correctly the true cessation, it means one is able to understand the Dharma. And it is through that understanding one will also be developed good trust and faith towards Buddha, and likewise good trust towards the Sangha. And it is also by understanding the true cessation or Dharma that one will develop genuine appreciation towards renunciation. In other words, the wish to get liberated from samsara. And by reflecting on the three types of suffering upon oneself, particularly by reflecting on the conditioned suffering, one can similarly understand the sufferings of other sentient beings, how they are tortured and tormented by afflictive emotions. And it is because of this understanding one's mind will be strongly moved by compassion. And because of this strong compassion, one is in great haste to free and liberate the kind mother sentient beings who are aimlessly wandering within the different states of existences within the samsara. And here one uses the word the kind mother sentient beings who are kind to us directly or indirectly. So these mother sentient beings are in fact like one's mother. And therefore one has a strong wish to liberate them from their such suffering, and one is really in great haste, one wants to liberate them quickly. So such people who has these qualities, it's important for them to consider what is the best way to fulfill the purposes of other sentient beings. The only way is that you yourself should know correctly and completely the path, and should be able to show the correct unmistaken path. Now, one will be able to do that only when you achieve enlightenment, the Buddhahood. So it is only by actualizing such a state of Buddhahood that one will be able to fulfill the temporary and ultimate purposes of sentient beings and quickly. So therefore it is only the Buddha who is our sole refuge. And even when we talk about such a great Buddha, the Buddha obviously is not a permanent factor. it did not come into such a state without cause and conditions. It is only by having undertaken certain practices on the path, on an ordinary path, that one was able to gradually purify one's mental continuum. So therefore, those that have the life and those that have the consciousness to understand the mind, understand the object, then we have the capacity to eliminate the afflictive emotions from our mind. So we have this potential as a kind of inborn quality by which we have the capacity to remove the afflictive emotions. So therefore, it is because of such quality that Buddha was able to achieve such a state. So likewise, in our own case, if we employ the right antidote, we can definitely remove these temporary mental afflictive emotions and defilements. So therefore, in order to fulfill the purposes of the sentient beings, one must achieve such a state of Buddhahood. So this such an achievement of Buddhahood is possible by cultivating the necessary causes and conditions. So the cause, the path that would grant upon you quickly the resultant state of Buddhahood is the profound Vajrayana vehicle. Because in the Vajrayana vehicle is called profound path, because it has a technique of undertaking a practice where there is harmonious practice of method and wisdom as one entity. So therefore, Tsongkhapa is urging us, instigating us to enter into such a profound Vajrayana path, which is a short path. If one has the above qualities to help sentient beings, that means if one has some intelligence, relying on great spiritual master, highly moved by compassion, has great concern for the wandering sentient beings, then one must enter into this profound Vajrayana path. Therefore, here I will explain the stages of the path of the great Vajradhara. This will be explained under two subdivisions. The first division explains about how the teaching of the Buddha alone is the path that leads to liberation. This is explained by Tsongkhapa saying that having entered into reflection and analysis of the great purposes of oneself and for others, when one is not satisfied merely by the system of the worldly wise elders' way of finding happiness and removing suffering just for this life, and when you seek higher qualities after this life, then the only path is the path of development of bodhicitta and all the other qualities and activities of a bodhisattva, which is really very difficult to develop appreciation wholeheartedly by ordinary people, and which is really a topic of discussion which does not conform to the ordinary worldly way. And so Buddha has actualized such a state because of which even his breathing in and out becomes a skillful method to benefit sentient beings, and is a source of great happiness for all sentient beings, and whose name is known in the three realms. So the only source of happiness, long-lasting happiness, is the teaching of Buddha alone. So we are all same wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, so long as we have the feeling. And the suffering that is to be eliminated and happiness that is to be cultivated, there are different levels in both the cases. Of course, many of you have heard my explanation earlier. For example, when you see an attractive object, you feel mentally happy, And when you see an ugly object, a frightening object, then you feel unhappy. So similarly is the case when you react with sound, smell, taste, a tangible object and so forth. So these kind of experiences, a kind of sensual experiences that we get in relation to the five sense objects are common to animals. The animals also have similar kind of experiences. They also cherish happiness and do not want suffering. And what distinguishes us as human beings from animals is our capacity to think. It's our intelligence. And it is because of our intelligence we are able to remember clearly what has happened in the past. In fact, what has happened in many years, it is because of this we are able to tell stories of the past generations and so forth. And likewise, it is because of this mental capacity that we are also able to plan and think about future and imagine about the future. And because of this mental power of imagination, that even though you may not be suffering physically right now, but because of reflecting about what has happened in the past history, you feel unhappy, you develop attachment, hatred, and so forth. And likewise, even though you are not physically experiencing or mentally experiencing some suffering or happiness because of present experience, but simply planning something about the future, you get either excited or get unhappy. It's all due to human imagination, the power of thinking. So therefore, in the case of human beings, it is really not only the sensual experiences, but we also, to a large extent, are influenced by our human capacity of thinking. So this capacity to think, or human intelligence, is of course a human quality, but this could also become a source of additional problems, additional worries. Under such a situation, today in this world, until now, there are certain sections of people who take care and interest about pleasures and sufferings only related to the five sense experiences. So therefore they are busy in trying to get good clothing and good food, how to improve their income and so forth. And similarly, people also develop attachment towards physical pleasure, including sexual engagement, which is common to experiences of animals. So these are more related to external factors, external objects. The external objects act as causes and conditions. Therefore, we need a good house to live, good food to eat, similarly clothing, ornaments, relatives and friends, and other sensual objects like good music, fragrant smell, beautiful environment. So these are all related to external material development, and you can clearly see that all our efforts that we put in the external material development are related to sensual experiences, medical treatment, improving sanitation and health. And in order to improve this, we go to school and educate ourselves. So the whole system of education is also related to gaining happiness, related to material improvement, material object. So here we are, when we talk about suffering, we are not talking about we are not at all talking about conditioned suffering. We are not at all talking about suffering of change. We are only talking about those levels of sufferings which are related to sensual experiences. But from the parlance and perspective of those people who are far-sighted and who are able to, who reflect and who think, these people realize that many of our problems, particularly the problems related to the mind, cannot be removed by power, cannot be removed by money, cannot be removed by any external amenities. So the only way to remove suffering is through transforming and training the mind. For example, if you practitioner and accept and follow a particular religion, then irrespective of whether that particular practice or religion has the capacity to protect you or not, but because mentally you have some object of refuge where you rely and trust, so that would help you lessen your fear, lessen your suffering. And it is how religion developed in the human society. And one who seeks the special features, special higher features after life, means that when we talk about actualizing happiness and removing suffering, who is that person who wants happiness and do not want suffering? It is the person, it is the I. Now when we talk about experiencing happiness, it is not just the physical body. For example, if you cut a piece of your body, then it will not have the capacity to experience happiness or suffering. Of course, in terms of experiencing happiness, it may have connection to the blood, the cells, the skins, and so forth. But the real experiencer of happiness and suffering is the I and the person. So with regard to that, in the text, the Buddhist text explains about a mind or consciousness.